follows the story of the Hittite Orthodox separation, and follow the later history of the Orthodox group as I did last time the later history of the Hicksite group. It's a more complicated history, and perhaps certainly numerically more important. And I don't promise to make it all clear, but I'll do something in that direction, I hope. Going back to the separation, which many of you were here to hear described and know about, it was, of course, a major tragedy in the history of Quakerism. It meant that their united front was broken. It reduced such prestige as they had. They'd had a lot to get over after the Revolutionary War in public relations because they didn't assist in the revolutionary side, and therefore being somewhat ill thought of, they needed all they could for public relations. And as a matter of fact, they were very highly regarded in spite of that. But when the separation came along, it gave them something of a black eye. If they believed in peace and couldn't keep peace in their own family, what did it prove? And it was a bad thing for the groups themselves. It affected them adversely. Instead of balancing the variety which was represented by the separation, it drove people to extremes. And I'm sure each side went off in its own direction, further and further from the original Quakerism, emphasizing opposite things. Instead of having the balance, which if they could have kept together, would have been helpful. And you'll see in this chart, which is being passed around, that there's one main stream and it divides into two, called Orthodox and Hicksite. Now, following the Orthodox, as I shall be doing now, you'll see that within a few years, it also made a division. And that was an unfortunate sequel. On the whole, the Orthodox group was larger and more vigorous. It was stronger. The Hicksites were not very strong in the Midwest. The Orthodox were stronger in the Midwest, and then when population expanded and new meetings were set up, going west all the way to the Pacific coast, it would be the Orthodox group that would make the establishments going west. And there are a whole series of new yearly meetings after 1828 being established further west. Incidentally, I'm reminded that we have in the library a complete file, practically, of the minutes of all the 30-odd yearly meetings there in bound volumes. So you have this group expanding westward and taking advantage of the move of population and of the pioneer spirit. Now, the most important figure in Quaker history after the earliest days was a man named Joseph John Gurney, and I'll have to say a word about him. I put his dates on the board. He came from Norwich in England. He belonged to a wealthy family, was a banker, and the brother of Elizabeth Fry, and a member of an important family, married into other Quaker family. And in many ways, as I say, the most influential Quaker since the first days. In modern parlance, he had everything. Does that make sense? He had everything. He had money. He had social position. He had education. And he had personal characteristics that were very ingratiating, and a deep religious fervor. Awfully hard to find fault with a man like that. And When he came to America, because that's the part I'm dealing with, is American influence, he very nearly carried everything before him. Whatever was old in Quakerism, he renewed, and whatever he had that was new in Quakerism, he imparted, and he had a tremendous influence in the 3 years that he spent in America. Incidentally, I noticed in the library, in the very last issue of the Mississippi Valley Historical Review, an article on his American visit. And this life of him by David Swift of Wesleyan University is a first-rate piece of biography. It's a brand new piece. Too new to appear on your bibliography. It's awfully hard to describe him in full. The man, I think the word evangelical, which we've tried to understand, interested in the Bible aspect of religion, in the historical place of Christ over against his contemporary relation through the inner life, and emphasis upon certain doctrines. And the other day when I was talking about the influences, I used the word evangelical and mentioned four or five subdivisions under that. Most of those are still true of Joseph John Girty. He was an English friend and on the evangelical wing of English Quakerism, which, as you know, never carried out a full split like the Hicksite separation. On the other hand, he wasn't at the farthest extreme of the evangelical group in England. There was one man, whose name was David Crutzen, who was much more extreme, much more vigorously anti-Hicksite, anti-Unitarian. He swallowed every extreme of the Orthodox position, of the evangelical position. And though he never came to America, he at least represented what would happen. And he was such an extreme evangelical that he finally resigned from London Yearly Meeting and carried with him quite a few of the members of the meeting, but nothing like an appreciable group in America. These are called the Beaconites. He wrote a book called The Beacon, a beacon for the Society of Friends. His name is Crudson, C-R-E-D-W-D-S-O-N. And he left Friends in 1836. When Joseph John Girty came to America and visited meetings, and of course he didn't visit any Hicksite friends at all. This is only an Orthodox Quaker. He traveled widely. He was a scholar, self-made scholar, but very well read, a really first-rate biblical scholar. He could speak on a par with the professors of theology and the theological schools in America, and he did. He was a gentleman, and acquainted with politics. He could talk on a par with the President of the United States. He held a public meeting for worship in the American Congress, and he talked to political and religious leaders everywhere. He was, of course, interested in the anti-slavery cause, and he argued on that. Not in the extreme way, but he was a friend of Whittier, he did talk to the anti-slavery Quakers, and he talked to the pro-slavery non-Quakers like Henry Clay, and he therefore could move in the best circles. As I say, he nearly carried everything with him. I'll have to explain, therefore, that though his influence, he influenced most of Orthodox Quakerism, there were some exceptions, and I'll speak of those. A prominent exception was a man named John Wilmer. He came from Rhode Island and was a minister among New England friends and traveled abroad. He traveled in Great Britain for several years, and he took exception to Joseph John Gurney's extreme evangelicalism. I want you to understand, both these men are vigorously anti-Hicksite. The quarrel is in the Orthodox camp. And the same kind of situation built up in the 1840s, which had built up in the 1820s, and in New England, where John Wilmer was a member, there took place a division in 1845.